Welcome to Soundside. I'm your host, Libby Dankman. Later in the show, we're talking about the history of our public lands in Washington State. In fact, stewardship of national parks is one of the few things that's popular with all political stripes, according to polling. There may be some lessons to be learned there, and we'll get into that in about 30 minutes. First up, the pandemic has taken an emotional and mental health toll on all of us, especially children and adolescents. Youth are struggling so much that the U.S. Surgeon General issued an advisory in December, highlighting the urgent need to address the country's youth mental health crisis.
We've had rates of suicide increase among our children, and for many kids during the pandemic, feelings of anxiety and depression worsen, and loneliness as well.
And LGBTQ plus youth in particular are struggling. According to research published in The Lancet, more than 50% of sexual and gender minority youth have reported increased anxiety or depressive symptoms since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. So today we are talking about how parents and schools can help gender diverse youth. What does affirming trans and non-binary youth look and sound like? I spoke to Brennan Hamm, the health education specialist and trainer for Seattle Public Schools, and we started with the stakes. What's the consequence when you don't call people by their preferred pronouns?
What we can really lean on is the CDC's whole child model. So that speaks to the need, in order for young people to achieve their full academic potential, they need to have access to their full selves, so the whole child. They need to be able to have access to their full school and their full community. So when we are asking young people to not be their full selves, which is a lot of times the like sort of de facto container that we are presenting to trans and non-binary students when we don't want to acknowledge pronouns and things like that, we're like, oh, you actually have to be small. You have to contort yourself to make sure that you fit within this other mold. What we are doing is diminishing their ability to be their full selves in schools, which also has deleterious effects on their academic success and learning. In my trainings, what I do is I talk about a scenario where we want to imagine what it is to be a young person and to be called a slur in the hallway on your way to class. I'm like thinking about whether or not that young person is going to be able to focus on their learning. And then we want to shift our understanding of this, not just as like a moment of like, oh gosh, this is terrible, but a moment of activation for adults and for all people around us. And to think instead, like, oh, this is our collective responsibility. We need to be thinking about this in terms of learning lost. So what is true is when somebody is like targeted or harassed on their way to class, they're not going to be able to focus on learning. And if that happens day after day, week after week, and we do nothing, then we are co-responsible for the theft of that young person's learning.
Now, let's just get the basics here. What's the responsibility for schools and teachers to support a young person's gender identity?
Yeah, it's a great question. For Seattle Public Schools and for all of Washington State, the recommendations are pretty much aligned. So for Seattle Public Schools specifically, the expectation is that students are allowed to assert their name and pronouns anytime pre-K through 12. They don't need parent permission. They don't need any sort of doctor's note. We trust our students know who they are, and the expectation is that school staff and their peer students alike are respecting those names and pronouns.
And so how do you establish that and help foster that in your training? I guess my question is, what do you do, Brennan, in order to foster that?
So part of my job as the health education specialist for Seattle Public Schools is to provide training and technical assistance for our schools. And so part of what I'm charged with doing is supporting adult learning. So all of our school leaders and all of our school staff are up to speed on what our district policy and procedure are for supporting trans students, and then also getting opportunities to practice how to both embed that kind of learning into classrooms, and that kind of like general cultural reset into classrooms. And a lot of times, especially for our younger kids, what we do is quick activities. So the beginning of the year, how are we introducing ourselves? My name is Brennan. I use they, them pronouns. And my favorite color is green. And this summer, I swam a lot, right? So things like that, where young people have opportunities to present who they are to their peers, and where it's not just, the onus is not put just on our trans and non-binary students, but is instead shared by everyone, so that becomes the new norm to share names and pronouns and for everyone to learn how to adapt to things that feel new to us. So if we know somebody for the last 5 years by one name or and pronoun set, right, to adapt and to change, to be flexible and responsive to the needs of that student or to the needs of that peer, if you are a student, is really what we're trying to support students in building up that capacity to do.
The sneaky thing here, Brennan, is that you and I are talking about schools and your work with Seattle Public Schools, but really I think that this lesson can help everyone interacting in the world, in their business, in their family, not to put the onus on somebody who is trans or non-binary to be the only people talking about pronouns, right? I mean, we all should be asking folks about what they like to use and also expressing that ourselves just out front so that folks don't feel like, oh, womp, womp, here comes the person who is going to talk about pronouns. Like, it's just a common thing that we bring up in everyday life.
Completely agree. And I think what's also true is that you can't always tell what pronoun someone uses based off of how they look. And I think so many people rely on that sort of schema practice of like just seeing who the person is and making an assumption. And really that doesn't work for folks. A lot of times, this isn't just a gender issue. A lot of times people do this around race and ethnicity. A lot of times people do this about presumptions about socioeconomics. So really this is a great practice in sort of lowering our guards a little bit and learning more about people as individuals and seeing their humanity. And I think what's really cool, especially with young people, is that our students are so adaptable and so smart and so much smarter than we are, frankly. And so anytime we hear, parents are like, oh my gosh, this is going to be too hard for my kid. No, that's generally not what we see. We see kids that they are spot on. They get it so quick. It's really the adults that take a lot more learning or unlearning to become more flexible and responsive to the needs of people who are different than them around them.
I'm talking with Brennan Hamm, health education specialist and trainer with Seattle Public Schools. When you talk about these issues with teachers and staff, everybody comes to the issue of gender and gender expression with different life experiences and different pre-existing knowledge sets. What kind of questions do you get and what kind of obstacles do you encounter when you're trying to impart these trainings?
So these trainings, we start with sort of baseline expectation of why we're there. And so we always start by saying that this is not about your personal beliefs or politics. This is about the expectation of all school staff treating all students with respect equally and making sure that all students have access to full learning. And so what we encourage is for staff, if they don't feel super jazzed about that, like, this isn't the place for them to work. We're a public institution and we're therefore charged with supporting all students. So really, I think because we start so unapologetically in support of our students who are perhaps different than what is expected or what is most commonly expected, because we start in that position of support, I think people sort of begin to lower their guards a little bit. So we then launch into a conversation about anti-violence and anti-violence framing to understand just how deeply rooted a lot of our conversations about gender and sexual orientation in general are just deeply rooted in violence and oftentimes legacies of white supremacy culture. And so we then, towards the middle half of the training, we then relearn gender. So we start bare bones, what people think about when they think about ultrasound, when they are able to first identify what's going on inside a womb. And so we get to talk about those things directly in our training. Actually what we're talking about here is the presence or the absence of a particular set of body parts, right? And so that's distinct from gender, and here's how. And so we just help people build these things up or rebuild these things up brick by brick to understand just how complex gender is and just how idiosyncratic our genders are. Femininity, for example, here in the PNW is going to be very different than it's going to be in New York City. It's going to be very different than it is in Seoul. It's going to be very different than it is in Moscow. Same is true for masculinity. So if we can just help people understand that these things are so much less rigid than we believe them to be, that allows people to soften their edges and make space for the real tremendous diversity that our students are bringing to the table every day.
There are parents out there who are sending their kids to school and they're not getting this kind of education. And there's definitely gaps that need to be filled here, Brennan. What can parents do if they are looking for ways to support their kids?
Great question. If those parents are in Seattle Public Schools, they should reach out to me and we can support them and their learning community in navigating our procedure, policy, protecting trans students, as well as curriculum that is supportive and affirming of trans young people and non-binary young folks. But for folks outside the state, an important thing to note is that even though Seattle Public Schools policy and procedure set are specific to us, the state procedure and policy and recommended procedure are not so dissimilar. So what is actually true is that a lot of the same rights that we put forth for our students are expected across the district, or excuse me, expected across the state. And so that includes name and pronouns, being able to have the right to be referred to by the name and pronouns you wish is a statewide right for students. And so when schools fall short of providing that, or when schools fall short of providing access to safe access to bathrooms and locker rooms and appropriate accommodations for athletics or for physical education or dress code policy, students can push back, because that is a student right violation. So they should reach out to OSPI, the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction for Washington State, for support to figure that out and move their district forward.
Brennan Hamm is the health education specialist and trainer with Seattle Public Schools. Thank you very much, Brennan, for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
And Brennan put together a series of videos on how students and teachers can support LGBTQ plus students. You can find those videos at seattleschools.org. And if you or someone you know is in need of safe and confidential support, speak to a crisis counselor with the Trevor Project at 1-866-488-7386. I'm going to say that number one more time, 866-488-7386. And we'll have more resources available on our website. You can find them at kuow.org/soundside. Hey, this is Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman, and I use she, her pronouns. And these pronouns are important, especially for the mental health of young people. Earlier this hour, we heard from Brennan Hamm, the health education specialist and trainer for Seattle Public Schools, about the impact using proper pronouns can have on school students. But what about at home or in communities at large? How can we support sexual and gender minority youth in these environments? Let's talk about that with Oliver Murphy, a community health worker with the Spectrum Center in Spokane. Hi, Oliver. Thanks for being on Soundside today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Let's start by talking about the needs of non-binary and trans youth in Spokane. And how does the Spectrum Center help with that?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, Spokane is a more conservative side of the state. So I think that we're coming up against slightly different, issues than you may see on the western side. One of the programs that Spectrum started last year to aid in helping trans and non-binary folks at large, but also the youth feel at home in their bodies is the GAP program, which is Gender Affirming Products Program. We've helped over 100 people get name changes, provide them with gender affirming products. And, you know, the youngest person that we've had through that program is 13. So it's been really rewarding to be able to help these folks that either don't have the means or just need a little bit of help feeling at home in their body, being able to provide that to them.
And you touched on this a bit, but in Spokane, in that part of the state, it's harder for young people to find those resources.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So luckily there is a youth center, Odyssey Youth Movement in Spokane, which does some really great work for young queer, trans, non-binary folks in Spokane. And we're just trying to expand on that. One of the programs that we're looking to start in 2022 is specifically geared toward parents of gender diverse, trans and queer children, to be able to, like what you said in your previous statement, be able to provide them with the assistance that they need in order to support and lift up their children.
Oliver, how has this picture changed during the COVID-19 pandemic?
Yeah, it's definitely changed,
right.
And it changes every day. So, we just recently, we've just recently switched from only meeting folks outside for GAP drop-offs and stuff like this, and it's really put a damper on what we're able to provide in regard to in-person services. We've had to cancel a lot of stuff or rearrange stuff at the last minute in order to provide the services that we want to be able to provide to the community. One of the things that we've actually done to support our, to lift up our community is we put on vaccine clinics over the past year. And we've had over 400 vaccines administered through our clinics. You know, every little bit helps, but, you know, the sooner that we can get through this pandemic, the sooner we'll be able to aid our community even more so.
Yeah. Oliver Murphy is a community health worker with the Spectrum Center, a nonprofit LGBTQ plus organization in Spokane. And Oliver, you came out as transgender at 29 years old. What was the most important thing for you to navigate your own journey? And what do you wish you had as a young person to assist with that?
That's a great question. Thank you. Yeah, so the thing that I would have, you know, I grew up in the 90s. So it was a different time in regard to just information that was available about gender identity, especially. You know, I grew up as a tomboy. And so, you know, I think looking back now, I think that if we would have had the verbiage and the knowledge that exists today about what transgender identity means and, you know, how to support children, how to talk to kids, right, about their gender without feeling persecuted. Would have been a huge shift for me as a child. You know, luckily I was able to come to it at some point in life. I know that I'm really fortunate in that fact. A lot of folks, you know, struggle to come to it at any point in time. But just having resources available and a community to go to and talk to is invaluable.
Yeah. Community and how to find that community in a safe way. Exactly. Also joining us right now is Dr. Amy Curtis, a child and adolescent psychiatrist at Seattle Children's Hospital and an assistant professor at the University of Washington. Hi, Dr. Curtis. Thank you for joining Soundside. Welcome to the conversation. And first off, this pandemic has taken a mental toll on American youth in general, but we are seeing some really disturbing numbers related to LGBTQ plus youth in this country. Can you explain why it seems that things are harder for this population?
Hi, and thanks for inviting me. Happy to be here. Yeah, it has been, we'll say it's been challenging, I think, the pandemic for everyone involved. So, you know, youth, adults, educators, schools, healthcare providers, families, parents. It's been very challenging. And several healthcare authorities have declared a national mental health state of emergency throughout, you know, our country right now. Everywhere is experiencing higher levels of mental health concerns, depression, anxiety, substance use, and suicidality. And in terms of, I think a few of the other folks who were speaking earlier about why potentially LGBTQ plus individuals, youth would be more susceptible potentially, or have that, you know, bear that disproportionate burden of experiencing higher rates of mental health issues, especially during the pandemic. I think it is probably related to multiple factors. It having a sense of support and community is very important. A lot of youth had that in in-person schools and seeing their friends. And so that was suddenly taken away from them, especially with the beginning of the pandemic. Even with, you know, everyone had hope with returning to schools too, that everything will be better. There was a huge push to return to schools. And, you know, we're seeing that it's a very slow process. You know, slowly we're seeing a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel in terms of some return to, you know, seeing their friends and social supports. But it's, again, it's difficult when we face the uncertainty of having, you know, repeated variants and COVID surges. It's just a difficult time. And then a lot of youth, you know, baseline had difficulty accessing regular, reliable, evidence-based mental health providers, gender-affirming, LGBTQ-affirming health providers, very difficult to find reliable access to those as well. And then with, you know, facing all the issues with access with the pandemic, a lot of folks, you know, lost their regular health providers, or they had to suddenly change from in-person that they were seeing, you know, if they were seeing a therapist, to changing to online therapy, which is an adjustment and not for everyone, and potentially not as effective for some youth. So, you know, related to so many different factors, sure. You know, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a simple thing, but it I hear in your voice exhaustion and sadness. And I wonder, Oliver, if this resonates with you as well, the work that you do at the Spectrum Center, which is a nonprofit LGBTQ plus organization in Spokane. Do you also see a severe effect during the pandemic compared to previous years with this population of youth?
Yeah, definitely. Actually, one of the things that I do alongside my work with Spectrum is I work for a local health organization as a COVID care coordinator. So I really see the impact that COVID has on family units and children firsthand in regard to, you know, the isolation and the just difficulty getting through day to day, right? You know, and I would like to say, as hard as it is and as draining as some of the days could be, and I'm sure that Amy can also speak to this, there are also some really great parts of working with LGBTQ plus youth. You know, there's nothing better. We just a couple of weeks ago covered the entire cost of a name change for a high school student, you know, who never thought that they were going to be able to have their name changed. And just to get to see the joy that comes out of that, you know, we try to focus on that instead of being drowned in, you know, what can feel like a lot of bummer stuff.
Yeah.
I guess, for lack of a better phrase.
I love that. Let's take these slivers of sunshine, Oliver, like that story you just shared. Dr. Curtis, Amy Curtis, a child and adolescent psychiatrist at Seattle Children's Hospital, if a parent or of a trans or non-binary youth is really struggling to get them, for example, affirmed in school spaces or other places where they are interacting, how can they create a better environment for their kid? What should parents know about how to create that supportive and safe environment?
Yeah, I think it's you can't, you know, point to any one thing that would be supportive. I think the first thing would be being able to facilitate an, you know, open and supportive environment that the youth feels comfortable talking to somebody. If it's, you know, ideally one of the family members or caregivers, parent would be a good person to start with. If it's, you know, difficult for the youth child to open up to parents fully, if the conversation is early, at least having one supportive adult that they can talk to, finding, you know, a healthcare provider. There are organizations that are actively working to, you know, link youth to healthcare providers and reliable mental health care, despite all of the access issues right now. You know, checking in about mental health and not shying away from asking about, you know, difficult questions and suicide, and making sure that they're supported if they're experiencing, you know, mental health struggles right now, which is, you know, very, very high rates for a lot of youth right now, let alone LGBTQ identified youth. Hmm. And then making sure that parents also have their own supports and focus on their own self-care. I feel like a lot of parents have kind of, they're just so busy managing so many different things, worried about their child, and, you know, focusing on their own mental health and making sure they have their own supports and parents to talk to who might be also, you know, working to, you know, support their gender diverse, trans, LGBTQ child is important as well.
Dr. Curtis, what are the ways in which working in this space makes you feel hopeful? Because I know it's a lot of heavy stuff day in and day out. But what are some takeaways with the work that you do, especially with trans, non-binary students or patients and adolescents, that, you know, you walk away and you just think, wow, this taught me something, or this made me feel hopeful?
Yeah, I will say that, you know, a lot of the young folks that I've worked with, even experiencing very low points and difficult times over the past few years, especially, those same youth are ones that always put a smile on my face, because they are, you know, use different forms of coping skills and different kind of creative ways and outlets, you know, whether it be like, you know, use of sarcasm or hysterical memes, or also they're just very inspiring with the willing to be advocates and speak out for those who are experiencing injustices. And I feel like that is also a very, you know, kind of hopeful, inspiring aspect of youth, and one that definitely helps me to stay motivated and you know, inspired every day when I'm working.
Dr. Amy Curtis is a child and adolescent psychiatrist at Seattle Children's Hospital. Oliver Murphy, let's end with you. Give us one way in which this generation of youth that you work with at the Spectrum Center or other organizations makes you walk away feeling more hopeful. Because you and I both grew up in the 90s, it sounded like, and we didn't even have language for this kind of thing when we were their age. Give us that sliver of sunshine to walk away with.
It's just, there's nothing better than seeing these kids figuring themselves out so young. I carry just so much awe and a little bit of jealousy that they're just they're able to, you know, figure out what themselves out and to support each other and build each other up for who they are, not having to hide, you know, the parts of themselves that, you know, that is different. And I think that that's just so amazing. And, you know, I just want to add on one more thing in regarding to like supporting the youth. The studies have been done that just using their correct pronouns and names is a game changer and a lifesaver. So if you're a parent looking to support your trans, non-binary, gender non-conforming child, call them their name and their pronouns, and that will really make them feel supported and like you understand and see them.
Yeah, it makes an outsized difference in their lives, which I hope is a takeaway from this conversation. Oliver Murphy is a community health worker with the Spectrum Center, a nonprofit LGBTQ plus organization in Spokane. Thank you to both of my guests and also my Seattle Public Schools voice in earlier in the hour. I can't say this enough. If you are someone you know is in need of safe and confidential support, you can speak to a crisis counselor with the Trevor Project at 1-866-488-7386. And we'll have more resources at kuow.org/soundside.